This podcast brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from the AUVSI Expo Show in Denver, Colorado. I'm with Johnny Walker. Johnny Walker has been in the UAS industry since way back in the mid-90s when Windows 95 was a thing and we didn't know anything about drones. So, you've given us a kind of a run-through of the history of this. And a couple of things you said I wanted to ask you about, and this is a little bit of a perspective question. We've got all these urban mobility drones that are promised to fly as soon as 2020. From your perspective, how close are we to integrating those into the national airspace system?
Well, probably beyond 2020. However, the point is, as you indicated, there's a great deal of interest now in the development and certification of various platforms that may meet that criteria, including maybe possibly an optionally piloted vehicle to start with. I don't know. I believe that the pathway that companies like Burlington Northern Santa Fe are using with the Pathfinder program with FAA for a linear pathway will provide information that will assist in what eventually will be a network coming out of urban areas, either to airports or other locations.
So if we envision an urban transportation system with autonomous vehicles, say in busy airspace, what do you think are the barriers now to getting that even to a pilot program demonstration type phase?
Well, one of the issues that comes to mind with that question is how airspace is delegated and used in the United States. If you did many of your listeners and readers know what the airspace looks like. It hasn't changed since the 1950s. The sectors and how we develop sectors are the same, primarily for the safe, efficient, routine flight through the National Airspace system with great air traffic controllers. What we're looking at now is finally where the elements of next-gen comm navigation surveillance, where you have a performance-based airspace. That's the key. A performance-based airspace will allow greater efficiencies with airspace. It will mean that airspace that air traffic controllers are delegated for flows into metropolitan areas will not need the large volume they have right now, which will free up airspace for other operations.
If you were to predict and make an estimated guess here, when would you say that kind of integration, and I'm talking about urban mobility here, becomes a reality?
I don't know.
Before 2030?
Maybe. Think about it. Next gen, the whole idea of comm navigation surveillance, air traffic management, a global view, came about 20 years ago. When I retired from the FAA in 2001 with the National Airspace Redesign Plan, the idea was to do exactly what you and I are talking about. Other priorities came up, and we went into another decline of moving forward.
That moves me to LAC, low altitude authorization and notification capability, which is basically the ability to authorize UAS operations close to real time. This is probably a step in that direction. What do you think is the effect of it for the short term and, say, for the next year or two?
Well, so it is a step forward. Give credit to the FAA working with industry as far as the low-level, small, unmanned aircraft operations for commercial. Keep in mind, that program is for visual line of sight only, and that is going to take a lot of burden off of the FAA for individual approvals. I think it's good as far as what it will be achieving. I think, though, as far as looking at what will be beyond visual line of sight, it's going to be the next key element. And there's a lot of barriers associated with that, but they're being overcome, again, by companies like Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad with the FAA.
Now, you're an airspace guy. You came out of air traffic control. You mentioned in your presentation this sense of a squeeze in the Class A airspace. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, not just Class A. When I said airspace, it was classic airspace. I view the airspace between 60,000 feet down to the ground classic. In other words, this is where we have the airspace set up, a Class B, D, E, so on. What's going to happen with below 3,000 or 4,000 feet, I'm going to include highly automated vehicles, is going to change how flows of traffic occur, especially in a urban environment delivery, hospitals connecting each other, package delivery. Likewise, what's happening above 60,000 feet is getting a lot of attention. I believe the paradigm is very similar in both above 60 and to say in below 3,000 feet. That will be true comm navigation surveillance performance-based airspace that will cause the rest of the airspace to take on attributes of that kind of like an Oreo cookie. I think the cream in the middle is going to start to change a little bit over time.
And again, that's long-term?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's that long-term. I think that the amount of billions of dollars investment in the global environment, again, in the room was what ICAO is doing right now with programs like Drone Enable. You have the United Arab Emirates strongly moving forward. Saudi Arabia is looking forward for changes. You have the Pacific Rim now really awakening. So what's going to happen out of ICAO is going to have a key factor, I think, as far as what happens in North America and Europe.
So I guess what you're saying is developments there are going to drive what happens in the U.S.?
It's going to affect, I think, a positive effect, because I am heavily involved in the international arena right now with a lot of great people, and I think that the conversation internationally is it's just not one country, one state that's going to have their way. It has to be a global solution.
Johnny Walker, thanks for the briefing.
You're welcome.
Paul Bertarelli reporting from AUVSI in Denver. Thanks for listening.
This podcast brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners.